Support for the Weird Homes podcast comes from the Austin Energy Solar Education and Rebate Program, providing solar rebates and education for Austin residents and giving you the knowledge you need to have a positive solar shopping experience. If you've been thinking about going solar, now through August, you can earn the most from your Austin Energy Solar Rebate, a total of $3,500. Learn more at austinenergy.com/go/solar101.
Hi, this is David J. Neff, and you're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Have you ever walked through your neighborhood, taken a look at a strange or weird home, and wondered, who lives there? What's inside of that home? Well, I think as human beings, we all have done that. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to explore the weird and strange world of the people who live in those homes. Hey, everybody. This is David J. Neff with the Weird Homes Podcast. Our podcast is all about creativity, design, and artists and entrepreneurs and people who are out there creating beautiful things. And today we have Lester Marks. Lester is one of our amazing homeowners and also a world-renowned art collector. And also, so folks know, Lester is joining us from beautiful Houston, Texas. So that is why he's on the phone today. Lester, say hello to the folks.
Hello, folks.
And let's just start, go back in time a little bit and tell me a little bit about your childhood and growing up and where did that take place?
Well, David, that's probably the single best question you could ask because I did an art talk at a gallery this week and we focused a lot on where does creativity come from? And for me, it's all explained when you take a look at my childhood. And I really believe that so many of us are deeply influenced by what happens in our childhood. So my story is that I grew up with my sister in a very small Texas town near Clear Lake. The town is called La Porte, about 10,000 people at the time. And David, I was always an outsider. I never really fit in. Here's the problem. First of all, we were the only Jewish family in the town.
Wow.
I was the smallest kid in my class. I had kinky Afro hair way before it was cool. I came from the richest family in town, which wasn't saying much considering the size of the town, but still, we were the richest family in town. That's what everybody said. So here I am, the only little Jew in town, a tiny little shrimp of a kid with crazy hair and from a family with, they considered, a lot of money.
Fair.
So to say that I was an outsider would be an understatement, really.
Yeah.
And so growing up from those situations and working my way through them, I began to find that it was actually benefiting me in that creativity is born out of frustration and difficulty. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got my start.
And, you know, Lester, we hear that theme. It's interesting. Over and over on this podcast, for those folks out there who've listened to multiple episodes, adversity bears creativity.
It really does, David.
Yeah, no, and super interesting to hear you say that.
I had never really thought of it. I have been collecting for decades. And there's a couple of questions I'm always asking. One of them is, how did you get into art? And it wasn't until recently that I really began to think about it and realize that it somehow flowed out of the difficulties I encountered. So yeah, it's you're right on.
And so tell me a little bit about that. So you grow up, do you go off to college? Do you get a job? How do you get out of that small town? And where do you kind of end up in your college or your early 20s?
Well, my parents moved from a small town into Houston when I was leaving for college. So that pretty much took us out of the small town mentality. Not that there's anything wrong with small towns. I would much prefer to be in a small town again. But there wasn't the exposure to what I ultimately found as my passion, which is art. Just wasn't available in the small town. Does that help?
It does. It does. And so tell us a little bit.
Okay. Well, the next phase, going to college. I went to Tulane in New Orleans. I have an interesting story. It's some kind of indication that I just was meant to be involved with art. I found a piece of art for sale when I was a freshman at Tulane. It was, I think, about $5,000. And I remember calling home and asking my parents if they would buy it for me. And, of course, they said, no, you're crazy. Well, it turns out I was looking at a Donald Judd, the father of minimalism.
Wow.
And that box that I was looking at for $5,000 is now in the $500,000 neighborhood. So my parents made a real bad decision.
I was just thinking that as you said that, you know, for those folks listening at home that have been to Marfa, Texas, or New York, Donald Judd, very preeminent minimalist artist, large installations in Marfa, Texas, and really helped shape that town. And yes, I was just thinking when you said that, your parents made the wrong long-term bet on that.
Yeah, and then to rebel against them, I continued to buy Donald Judd's at a much higher price when I got into my full adulthood. So I spent 30 years in the car business, and I don't even know if you knew that, David. But
I did not.
My family was in the car business. It started with my grandfather, and then completely kind of independently, my dad started in the car business, and I spent a year as a Montessori teacher out of college, and then went into the family business and did that for 30 years. And we had the most artfully decorated showrooms, I would say, in the United States. The main thing I loved about being in the car business was the fact that I had these big showrooms that I could decorate with art. So we had artful car dealerships.
And, you know, it's interesting, too. I often think, and there's a lot of people out there, and you may feel this way as well, but maybe there are some modern cars, but as I think of classic cars of the 50s and 60s and even the 70s, that's art, too, right? The way a car looks, the styling, the lines, there's some beautiful work there.
Absolutely. The only difference in men and boys is the price of their toys. And, yeah, I do have a pretty exotic car I drive, and it is a moving piece of art.
I believe it. And so talk to me about, you had this kind of inspiration, this drive. Where do you think that came from? Did someone tell you, take you to an art show? Was it your own eye and you had always had that? Were you doodling on napkins as a kid? Where do you think that drive to be in this art world came from?
Well, it wasn't because I had any inherent artistic talent. I can't draw. My 8-year-old daughter just puts me to shame. She could turn out these magnificent artworks. I can't do anything on paper. Now, I am an artist and I show regularly, but it is abstract photography.
Mm.
But I can't paint. I can't draw. Part of the phenomenon came about, I believe, from my parents. They collected art beginning about the time I went to college. They started buying a few pieces of art. And I remember that, well, actually, it was one of their first pieces they ever bought because I was only like 15 years old. And I remember going to New York with them to Andre Emmert Gallery, which was one of the kingpins back in those days. And my parents were looking at Hans Hofmann painting. And I remember we were taken into this private room and shown painting after painting. And that made a really big impact on me. I remember it like it happened yesterday, and I don't remember what I did yesterday. I did have a little creative burst of output in my high school years. I started writing poetry, and actually from the age of 14, I started performing around town. There were a few places where I could go and read poetry, and I started playing with paints, but not in a traditional way because I've already said I can't paint. But I was actually just playing with the raw paint that comes out of the tube. I was sandwiching it between two pieces of glasses and rubbing it together, kind of doing my own Jackson Pollock type, see what happens.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, between my parents and between just my my desire to be creative, I began to get involved. Now, there was a particular moment we can talk about, if you want.
Sure, of course.
Well, the first piece of real, what I call blue chip art, and nowadays, blue chip art is a rather loose term. It can mean lots of different things to different people. To me, it means art from about $50,000 up.
Okay.
To some people, it means from about $25,000 up. When I got out of college, I was just driving by an art gallery, and I saw work inside. It was work by the light artist from California, Larry Bell, who is in his late 80s today and has had a resurgence and is doing very well. And when I saw that work through the gallery window, I didn't even have to be inside the gallery. It was just like someone had injected me with something.
Wow.
And I just fell. I fell for those Larry Bell, they were called cubes. They were glass cubes that Larry Bell vaporized metal onto. And they were very subtle and very powerful. And that was kind of like, that was it. It's like getting hit over the head.
And you started to collect. And I guess, you know, for people not familiar, do people collect art and keep it? Do they keep it and then they sell to go buy something new? How does that work? How does that kind of world look like for those who don't know?
Oh, that's such a good question. It's not that easy to answer. People do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I collect to keep. The only times that I sell a work is basically if I need the money, David. And sometimes now, after all of these years of collecting, I am starting to sell some work that I have duplicates of by the same artist.
Okay.
Because I'm just running out of space. And so if I have more than one work by an artist and I need to create some space, that's where I look first, is duplications. It's very rare that when I collect that I only buy one piece by an artist. If I like the artist enough to buy a work, chances are I'm going to end up with two or three.
And so so talk to me about that. So you're in the family car dealership business. You're helping.
Well, I was. And the last dealership was sold in 2006. We still have a big leasing company, but I'm not involved in it on a day-to-day basis.
And back,
so I'm free to do art full time now.
Got it. And back when you were involved and you were collecting, you know, I've seen your house now, and I guess my question is, where were you putting all of this back in the back in the day in the 80s and the 90s and things like that, as you collected more and more pieces?
I think you've done this before. These are really good questions. I would answer this way. I would tell you that when I was looking in 2001 for the house that we're currently living in, my realtor, an older than me at the time, well, she still is older than me, our realtor told me at one point in my search for a home that in 30 years, I was the worst client that she had ever had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she said, you have looked at more houses than any client in 30 years. What are you looking for? And what I was looking for is a place to put all the art that not only I had in the previous home, but mostly for all the art that I had in my head.
Mm.
Because I had seen so much art that I really felt like would be a great fit for my collection, but I didn't have any place to put it.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a house that would accommodate the art that I had in my mind. Pieces like a Richard Long sculpture made out of rocks. He's a British environmental artist. And he makes these big, depending on what size you are looking for, these big stone circles that are 30 feet in diameter. They can be much larger. But anyway, I wanted to put one of those in my house. Well, you know, it's not just every house where you can put a big stone circle in the center of your house. So, you know,
right.
I found a house that was built around an atrium. And that atrium used to be a banana garden.
Mm.
And now it houses Richard Long sculpture. So, you know, I was looking for things.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. Shelley and I bought our current house together based on, you know, mid-century modern, of course, and we like the layout and the flow, but really two things. A wall for us to put our projector on so we could watch movies, and our Halloween party. How do we have enough room to put people in here, have a really fun, somewhat scary, legendary Austin Halloween party? And we thought a lot about that, so I'm sure our realtor maybe felt the same way. She just didn't tell us that.
Well, what I take away from what you just told me is I'm wondering where my invitation was for that Halloween party.
We will get you one in the mail this year, I promise. You're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Hey, everybody. This is David J. Neff with the Weird Homes Podcast. Are you new to solar energy? Are you thinking about it, talking to your friends, posting on Facebook, trying to learn more? Forget all that. We have much better options with Austin Energy Solar Incentives Program. Austin Energy has a solar education portal that really teaches you how solar energy can power your home. It's a great way to start the process and really learn more. Plus, what do we all love? We love rebates. They have those on their website as well, and also talking you through the installation, how those rebates work, and how solar works in general. So check it out. Go to austinenergy.com/go/solar101. And so you've now said, great, I'm able to collect more, I'm able to find this house. And then, you know, for someone like you, I wonder, how do you decide what to put in the house? You know, you have, which I find amazing and beautiful and would like to replicate in the future, and I know Shelley feels the same way, is you actually have installations in your house, an entire room that has been either installed by the artist or you've really curated what goes into that room. So talk to me a little bit about that process. How did you think through that?
Well, first of all, I never set out to become, quote unquote, a collector. Nobody, I don't think, sets out to become a collector. I just set out to buy a piece of art. And I bought that Larry Bell cube, and then I bought another piece and another piece, and I just kept going. But it's not like I said, okay, I'm going to become a collector. No, I kind of bristle even at the term collector. I consider myself more a curator. And so by that, I mean, it's not so much the objects themselves, but how they relate to one another. Mm. And so if you're starting out to collect art, you just do the same thing that I did and just gravitate towards works that move you. There's a good philosophy to collecting art, and I use that, and I try and only buy good art. And it's a laugh line, but really, contemporary art is, to a large degree, defined as good by how you feel about it.
Right.
Because you're buying it to live with, conceivably for a lifetime. You're not buying it for a museum. You're not buying it for some art reviewer. It doesn't matter if it's a $300 piece of art. It's about if it moves you. Is it something that you enjoy? You know, you might enjoy landscapes. You might enjoy something totally different. But, you know, as you go through becoming involved in art, you'll start to find out what you're attracted to. And that really is the best guide I can give, is to follow your heart. And that's pretty much what I've done. I've just collected works that I'm attracted to, that I feel add a certain joy to my life.
No, I love that. And we talk a lot on this show and in the tour, in our books, on our website, about creativity, inspiration. following something that excites you, makes you say, I want that, that I see, I can visualize in my mind's eye where that would go, how it would look, and why it's interesting. So I love,
perfect.
I love how you said that.
Perfectly, no, perfectly said. You know, we've gotten to the point, I live here with my wife, who is a physician and cares nothing about art. She is way too busy being a doctor and taking care of our 8-year-old. And it's kind of funny because the question that we're most often asked when we bring thousands of people through the house a year, I believe that art lives by companionship. That was told to me by Mrs. DeMeneal, who was the founder of the Meneal Collection in Houston. And I believe it was told to her by the famous abstract expressionist artist Robert Motherwell, or it might have been Mark Rothko. But anyway, art lives by companionship. So I love to bring people through the house. And the question I was going to go back to say is, people say, does anyone live here? And I say, well, yeah, I live here with my wife, my 8-year-old daughter, our 8-year-old daughter, and now we have a 4-month-old cockapoo. And so it's a little bit crazy sometimes, but it's a lot of fun over here.
Yeah, no, and talk to me, give me some advice and give the people listening advice. They live in, you know, their normal home in a suburb in Texas or California, or, you know, they live in Portland, Maine. They're listening to this and they want to do something different. They want to just change something in their home. They know that that eggshell white Home Depot wall is not exactly what they want. What's some advice? How do you get started to change your home?
Hello, Portland. Shout out to Portland. Well, the first thing you have to have, and really the only thing you have to have to get started, is a desire. And I'm starting to sound like a 12-step program.
No, you're spot on. Preach.
You just need a desire. If you have no desire to put a piece of art up, then don't do it. But most people in the world do have a universal desire to have some form of art on their walls, from the earliest caveman through to today and through, I suppose, the rest of civilization. Art has always been a part of people's culture. And so I would say, if you're interested in acquiring your first piece of art, to just start to get involved, take that desire and move it to the next stage, and that would be involvement. And no matter where you live, there are art galleries, there's art organizations, there's art publications. Recently, I'm in Houston, and I Googled visual arts organizations in Houston, and I remember there were something like 8,611,000 sites that popped up.
Wow.
So there is no shortage of opportunities. I would just say get involved. Magazines also are good, but, you know, with the internet now today, I do so much of my involvement in art right on my computer.
Yeah. And tell me too, you know, I think people struggle sometimes, so busy, job, work, they're on their phones, you know, social media, other things. It's hard, I think, for people to take a pause and be creative. And I see you as a very creative person. I see a lot of our homeowners and other people we interact with as a very creative person. Is there a way to just be more creative? Some advice you could give? Is it meditation? Is it, you know, take some time and go to an art gallery? How can people be more creative in their lives?
Okay, two-part answer. One, a little pitch. I do have company LCM Partners, which you can reach at lestermarks@gmail.com or on my Instagram at lestermarksartcollection. I do work with people to help them decide what kind of art works for them.
Awesome.
But as far as how do you juice up your creativity?
Right.
No, I don't think that's really necessary. I think people just have to slow down just a little bit. I really, truly believe that we are all born as artists. It is just part of the human brain. We have a creative aspect to our natures. We all have it. It's some people or you've heard the expression left brain or right brain. Yes, some people are more right brain, like my wife. She just into the exacting details of being a physician. Some of us are more left brain creative, but we all have that left brain. We all have the creativeness sewn inside us. It's just waiting to come out.
I love that. Thank you, Lester. And for everyone listening out there, Lester, what's the best way for them to check out that LCM Partners, get educated? What's the best way to reach you? Give us, you know,
if you have any interest in reaching me, if you would just like to browse my collection that we're still getting on Instagram at like 22,000 followers, and we've just been doing this for about 6 months, so I'm excited that people are enjoying it. If you'd like to see the collection, I just go to at Lester Marks Art Collection, and that's on Instagram.
Great. Thank you, Lester, for the time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a blast.
And this is David J. Neff. We're at Weird Homes Tour is the Instagram, weirdhomestour.com as well. So reach out to us. And again, thank you for listening. We hope you come away with a little more creativity and come away with a little more inspiration today. Thank you so much for listening. We'd love for you today to go check out our website at weirdhomestour.com. You can find the new coffee table book that features all the homes that you're hearing about on the podcast. We'd also love for you to check out our Instagram, Weird Homes Tour. And finally, really, we want this podcast to inspire you to show that design has no boundaries and that we would rather have neighbors be strange than be strangers.